If you're a parent, I guarantee you have, at one time or another, been embarrassed by your child's behavior. If you're the parent of one of those really intense kids who can have a catastrophic meltdown over brushing their teeth, the feelings of helplessness you experience go way beyond embarrassment. Today, we have some answers for you. This is LD Expert Live. I'm in Southern California, the home of Disneyland, the happiest place on earth. But at the end of the day, there is nothing happy about Disneyland for an overly tired, whiny child and their parents. Our guest today is a parent who has been in the trenches with a child with difficult behaviors. She knows what it's like to try and fail with traditional approaches, but she has a message of hope for you today and some practical guidance for meeting your difficult child right where they are and compassionately moving them to a place of control and success. Welcome to LD Expert Live, your place for answers and solutions for learning differences, dyslexia, and attention challenges. I'm your host, Jill Stowell, founder of Stowell Learning Centers and author of At Wit's End, A Parent's Guide to Ending the Struggle, Tears, and Turmoil of Learning Disabilities. To get a free copy, go to parentsatwitsend.com. Let's say hello to Lauren, our moderator and director of clinical growth and operations at Stowell Learning Centers. Good morning, Lauren.
Hello. A resource for you families and parents is our private Facebook group, Mom Squad. You can find that either on our Facebook page or searching Facebook groups, SLC Mom Squad. That's a private Facebook group for parents. We post resources. We answer questions. Facebook has a new feature where you can post anonymously to ask advice from the group. So be sure to join. We're really establishing a community there, and it's for you parents. So you could, again, find it in Facebook groups, SLC Mom Squad. I still see people checking in. Great. Love to have you. Really excited about today's guest, Deborah Ann. I've known her for a number of years when she ran OC CHAD, Orange County CHAD, which is an organization for families and parents dealing with ADHD. And I've also, as director of our Irvine Center in Orange County, have referred a number of families to her, helping the behaviorally challenging child workshops, because huge resource for our families. I know I personally also was looking into taking her class as a mom myself. And so really excited to hear what she has to share. She gets it, truly.
If you're just joining us, this is LD Expert Live. I'm your host, Jill Stowell. Our guest today is Deborah Ann Afarian. Deborah Ann is a parent and certified collaborative problem-solving trainer and coach. As a parent desperately seeking help for her child, she did everything she could to educate herself. She has a real heart for serving and helping other parents, which led her to founding a nonprofit educational and support organization called HBCC, Helping the Behaviorally Challenging Child. This nonprofit organization provides trainings for parents, educators, and healthcare providers focused on understanding children with behavioral challenges through a new lens. HBCC provides developmental trainings in collaborative problem solving in Orange County, California, and networks as a clearinghouse to get families connected to support groups, learning centers, and service providers who embrace the behavioral approaches. She has tons to share with you today, so let's get started. Welcome, Deborah Ann.
Good morning, Jill. Nice to see you.
Well, it's so great to have you. You know, it can be pretty lonely to have a child with behavioral challenges. These kids and their parents are so misunderstood and so judged, to be honest. I would love for you to share what your son is doing now and then talk a little bit about your journey that helped him get there.
Yes, thank you. I do want to start with saying I did suffer from my own EMPD, embarrassed, mortified parent disorder. Our son today, though, is a formerly challenging child. I mean, he's 27 years old on the 18th of February this month. He owns his own media consulting firm. He has a partner since 2015. They have 5 employees. He's doing amazing today. Mm-hmm. They do video ads for YouTube, Instagram, all that stuff that is way above my head today. But he also got married July 25th of 2020. So he had a pandemic wedding. And I think all the things that he learned as a child now from what I had learned and my husband had learned have helped him greatly in adulthood and having a lot of coping skills for even something like 2020 in this pandemic that we've had. But we have 2 boys. They're 21 months apart. Our oldest, when he was young, was energetic, curious, outgoing, academically bright, very extroverted and adventurous. Our youngest also was curious and academically bright, but he was more introverted. They were both very excited about starting school, very smart academically. Our oldest son, though, the teachers, they were challenged to keep him busy in school because he would finish things very, very fast. He overperformed academically. But where he overperformed academically, he was behaviorally very challenging, impulsivity, curiosity. On his weekly reports, it was always where his grades were 100%. But you know those little sad faces that they give you for the behavior? He kept getting that, and his infractions were things like blurting out and wanting to follow exactly how the rules were laid out. If the teacher misspoke accidentally, he caught it and he corrected it. If something was misspelled on the board, as young as kindergarten, first, second, third grade, he thought he was being helpful. But this is what I came to learn, that behaviors can be very misunderstood. And it was looked at a lot that he was smart enough to know better. Like the behavior was equivalent to his academic abilities, which I've come to learn is very, very different. In first, second, third grade, he was held in a lot from recess. I've come to know now that he had dysgraphia, or maybe even still has dysgraphia, but his handwriting was so bad, sorry about that, that he was held in to redo it. So I started to volunteer at the school to find out a better handle on what was going on. I don't know if you're familiar with those clipboards. What is it? Red, yellow, green. And he kept getting clipped during the day for things like his messy handwriting, blurting out, you know, not sitting still. It got interesting because in those parent-teacher conferences, I remember specifically in third grade that it was talked about, you know, what do we do at home to make sure that he knows how to follow the rules that are set? And what kind of consequences does he get in order to make sure that he knows how to behave? The implication was a lot that it was our poor parenting that was not handling the behaviors well. And I say it was interesting because when we went 2 doors down to our younger son's parent-teacher conference, we were praised for being such wonderful parents. And your son is so well behaved and he follows all the rules and you're just must be so proud. And it was such a different experience with each child. So we became very confused about what was going on. We were the same parents. We were proud of both boys. But school was starting to chip away at our older son's confidence, his sense of well-being. I started a journey to really understand what was going on because I didn't think it was as purposeful as it was being understood to be. There were things that I noticed as I volunteered in the school. I didn't know at the time to call it literal thinking, but an example would be that the teacher wanted to speak with him and said, "You know, you need to take a seat so we can discuss this." Now, most people would just sit down, right? But he picked up the chair and asked, "Where should I take it?" Those kind of things that were understood in general, like he was trying to be funny. And he wasn't. He looked around as people were laughing and tried to kind of go along with it. But I could see that he wasn't really, it was like someone was speaking a foreign language. He wasn't really understanding what was being said. Another incident of that was when his music teacher, because he played instrument very well, the piano was something that he played in third grade for the whole entire class, right? He was the single piano player. So like I said, he wasn't kind of a precocious child in a lot of ways. He was very advanced. And the music teacher was talking about how he learned how to play by ear. And he corrected her and said, "No, I play with my fingers. I don't play with my ear." And, you know, these kind of things were looked at like he was trying to be funny, but I could see it differently. And I really needed to understand more about him to help just give him the confidence to be aware of how he saw the world and then how to be able to communicate what his thoughts and feelings really were. I thought the schools would be more prepared to handle a bright and quirky kid. That's what we came to understand him as, because he was presented very well. It wasn't as if there was a way that you could say, "Oh, well, look, he's very, very different, and that's why this goes on." And in trying to really understand what was happening, we got an assessment. And that's when he was diagnosed with ADHD. So we understand there was a neuro difference. Neurodiversity is something that I've come to learn a lot more about. When he was diagnosed with ADHD, there's a standard treatment that's implemented, right? Be more consistent, follow through, make sure that you nip everything in the bud. It's a token economy of a lot of rewards and consequences. Honestly, it's a lot of work, but as a parent, you love your kids, you want them to do well, you're willing to do whatever it's going to take, right? So even though it was a lot of work, we were very willing to do it. And I assured all the professionals that we would get an A+ in following through with the directives that we were given to help him meet the demands of life and school and in the future work. Of course, we go global to one day he's going to have to learn to live in the real world, and things like that were expressed to us. When we went back to follow up with the psychologist, we let them know this wasn't working. And the result of that was to additionally diagnose him with ODD. "Oh, he must have oppositional defiant disorder. What do you do about that?" Just keep doing what you're doing and make sure, you know, that he knows he can't get away with that. It wasn't comfortable for me as a parent to approach it that way. My husband and I saw it wasn't comfortable for our son. I was fortunate at the time, you know, when I first had our first son, I was 36. So I was able to stay home and be a stay-at-home mom. And my husband was very supportive of, you know, I'll make the money, you go make the difference. Let's figure out what's up, what's going on. I, at that time, started reading a lot of different parenting books. I akin myself to being like Johnny Five in that movie Short Circuit, where he's the robot trying to learn how to be human. So he's reading all those books. I need more input. I need more input. And that's how I felt. You know, I needed more input. I needed to understand what was going on because I knew he wanted to meet expectations of adults. So I stumbled across a book called The Explosive Child. And this was a book that addressed more about lagging skills in the areas of frustration tolerance, you know, cognitive flexibility, all these terms as a parent I wasn't familiar with, but wanted to get to know more about. And it really, really spoke to me that this is what was going on with our son. And at that time, Ross Green, Dr. Ross Green, who wrote the book, was working with Dr. Stuart Ablon in Boston at Mass General Hospital. Well, I'm from Boston. How convenient is that? It was like the perfect storm where I'm going to go and I am going to learn all about this thinking that was so different than everything I was hearing from professionals and learning about. And I went and visited family and I went to these conferences. Now I call myself now a conference crasher, because parents weren't at these conferences. This was psychologists, therapists, psychiatrists. I went probably over 2 years. I went to about 5 different conferences to really understand what this approach was about. So our son was 9 when I first started learning. I think I understood it really well by the time he was about 12 years old. And then at his school, teachers, other parents, we were a close-knit private school. So a lot of people knew about our son and his behaviors, and other people had kids. I mean, we're 1 out of 5, really. So the numbers started becoming where there were a lot of people who we found our own tribe in each other, right? And they started to see differences. And it was like, wow, how did you do that? What is it that you're doing now? The biggest thing was regulating myself when he got low frustration tolerance, or instead of becoming embarrassed about his behaviors as a reflection of me, I started to be more curious instead of furious, like, oh, you're going to embarrass me. Stop doing that right now. And so other people were seeing it and they said, can you teach me how to do that? I want to learn because my kid can get like that sometimes too. So it became kind of an organic transition to starting a support group with parents at the school who also had energetic, academically bright. I mean, at that time, Jill, 18 years ago, there weren't terms for kids like our son. Now we call them twice exceptional. Now we call them bright and quirky. You know, we have terms that aren't so negative. Because I look back even at myself as a kid, I was energetic, impulsive, hyperactive, and it was more like, oh, you're just a brat and you need to learn to behave. So yeah. I like that it's evolved where we understand these kids better.
Right. Absolutely. And I am sure there are so many parents that are just saying, oh my gosh, that sounds like me and what I've gone through and my child. You know, you said something that I think is really important to say again. You went and got help and you said, we would have gotten an A+ in their approach, but it wasn't working. And not because our son didn't want it to. And I just think there are a couple of really important things there. Just as we find with learning and attention challenges, traditional approaches work for about 70% of the population. But for the other 30%, they simply don't. And if we really want these kids to maximize their potential, whether with learning or behavior, we have to get out of the traditional box and look at the challenges in a different way and use a different approach. So I would love to talk just for a minute about what that conventional approach to addressing behavior challenges looks like and how it works. And then we'll kind of look at where to go when it doesn't work. So what does that conventional approach look like?
And what I've come to understand is what it looks like is that a child needs to want to behave well. The understanding is that to make them want to behave well, you dangle a carrot or you carry a stick of a consequence. So rewards and consequences are what are going to make them want to do well. And we get in the business of very much focusing on that as a way to gain compliance. And it's really looking at compliance is the goal. With collaborative problem solving or any relational type of approach with growth mindset or any of these experts now that I've come to follow, it's about, well, there's a philosophy behind it all, and that is that kids do well if they can. If they could do well, they would do well. And if they're not doing well, that something's getting in their way, and rewards and consequences were never meant to teach complex thinking skills. So just like in academics, where we learn a child is maybe having trouble with reading comprehension, for example. We don't put up rewards or consequences to learn to comprehend reading. I mean, maybe 50 years ago, we would think they're just lazy and dumb. But now we know there could be dyslexia or dysgraphia, dysmorphia, things that are going on. So we will do an assessment, first of all, and then put in some scaffolding. And then the expectation is that it's going to take 5 months, 2 years, 5 years. We know it's going to take time to comprehend reading. And we're very intentional about helping the child to get there or the adult. With behaviors, we feel it's more will-based. So we're going to make them want to do well. It's not looked at as skill-based. And when we shift to that lens that it is skill-based for that 30%, right? Because that's mm-hmm. where I think we get fooled a bit. It works for so many that we think it's going to work for everybody.
Right.
So if it's working for 70%, then it's going to work for this 30% too, and it's more, we were kind of looked at like as parents, we were delivering it improperly, and that's why it wasn't working. I think this new awakening now is that we don't have to go year after year after year with this reward and consequence. We can learn really quickly to then shift off and realize kids do well if they can. There's a lagging skill behind there. Let's do an assessment. Let's figure out what is the profile of this kid. Let's figure out what scaffolding we need to put in place. And adults should realize that it's going to take some time to behave in the way adults expect kids to behave. It's not that we're not in hot pursuit of them meeting the expectation, which a lot of times can be said that we're being passive parents or passive professionals. No, we're in hot pursuit of helping them meet expectations. It's just a really better understanding of knowing when is the most teachable moment, because conventional parenting, conventional discipline would say you do it in the heat of that moment. And with this population, that's more like pouring gas on a fire.
Right.
And it just makes it worse. And so let's realize that and say, let's shift off that approach. It's not working so well, and see if we can be more curious. And that's counterintuitive to what we've been taught forever. If you don't nip it in the bud, they're going to rule the roost. They're going to think they can get away with that behavior. And so to have the habit to not do it in the heat of that moment feels very uncomfortable at first.
Right. But, you know, there is, I have learned, there really is a reason underneath behavior. And so I like that idea of being curious, to wait and watch and ask and find out, you know, what is going on under there. And of course, in the heat of the moment is not the time to do it, because they're not, I mean, it's the time to watch, but not the time to dialogue, because they're not going to be in their rational brain.
Rose, good morning. What you're discussing sounds so very familiar. We have, let's see, Ellie saying, you know, he's smart enough to know better. If only I had a penny for every time I've heard that. So definitely resonates with a lot of parents. Myra is saying, I have a son with ADHD and it's hard for him to sit during Zoom class. So even more so, you know, when you're talking about your journey with your son, now adding on top of that virtual learning to all of that, you know, stress that our parents are going through. Karen, you know, talking about the clip charts, and teachers still use clip charts. It's, my child's teacher uses it in the classroom. Really dislike those clipboards that teachers think are useful. Kids who don't get to clip up due to behavior issues are constantly discouraged and receive the message, you aren't good enough. And the kids who have more self-control do not learn from this, because they're already where the teacher wants them to be. Yes, we have Terry. Oh my goodness, this is both my boys. The schools just don't understand this. This is definitely the message that we're hearing a lot this morning today. Consequences, Rose saying, consequences and rewards only make matters worse and do not seem to produce positive effects on this behavior. So you struck a nerve, Deborah Ann. I mean, this is, like I said, this is what parents need right now. It's definitely something that resonates with parents, especially behavior, especially, you know, you sharing, thank you so much, with your son, that he is bright. He is smart. He's not like the typical, you know, kind of bad behavior kid that's just, you know, not successful. I mean, he is, and you saw that potential. Rose is saying, I know my son really wants to succeed, but can't seem to find a way to do so. So again, thinking about, you know, is it skill or is it will? So thank you for shedding light on that. I know a lot of parents really, you know, see that in their, that potential in their own children.
Thank you, Lauren. It kind of helps everybody know that you are not alone in this journey. This is LD Expert Live. I'm your host, Jill Stoll, and we're talking with Deborah Annafarian about understanding and helping behaviorally challenging kids. You know, our students at Stoll Learning Centers are bright and capable in so many areas, and so often their struggles with school are perceived as being a lack of motivation or laziness. And, you know, I, you know, when Lauren said, is it skill or will? And, you know, you're saying, you know, so often people say they could do better if they wanted to. And I agree with you. It's much more accurate to say they would do better if they could. Kids want to do what adults want them to do. They want to succeed. And we certainly see that happen all the time at the learning centers. They do better once they have the skills they need to do the job. And what people don't understand is that with, you know, in our case with our learning kids, it doesn't matter how smart you are. There are supporting skills that have to be in place in order to be able to read, for example. And so if you don't identify and develop those weak supporting skills, then the student is going to continue to struggle. And the thing I really like so much about this collaborative problem-solving approach is that it works on the same premise. Poor behavior has always been looked at as willful and oppositional and defiant. Rewards and consequences can motivate a child and change behavior if the needed skills are in place. But if they aren't, then rewards and consequences don't work. So, Deborah Ann, I want to talk about what those lagging skills are for our behaviorally challenging kids.
Yes, and I just want to back up a little bit when a couple of the comments were, I wish teachers knew more about this. And in empathy to teachers, the same way as parents, you know, I didn't know about this and I loved our son. My husband and I really wanted to know what we've now come to learn. And that's the message that I want to pass out, that we really need to help parents and teachers understand this philosophy, understand this tool to helping all kids. And in this neurocognitive skill area, what you're talking about, there's only five areas of lagging skills that could be happening, whether it's language and communication skills, attention and working memory skills, emotional and self-regulation skills. This is where adults really don't understand what's going on when kids have those big, huge emotions, cognitive flexibility skills, and social thinking skills. And one of the things about those big emotions, you know, with ADHD and its diagnosis, I think it's not understood enough the levels of ADHD. I mean, it can be mild, moderate, severe. So I think our son is more moderate, severe. I also was diagnosed ADHD and it's more moderate. But there's, I think, and don't go by my numbers, but there's like 10 or 15 criteria to be diagnosed with ADHD. None of them are involving emotions. None of them are involving these areas that really affect kids so much in that emotion regulation. If you're flooded with a lot of feelings, I think of it like a volcano's kind of erupting. These kids they're not taught. We haven't taught them how to deal with these feelings and these emotions that come up. And it's very much a part of ADHD, which is now, just now starting to be understood and recognized. And the best book on that is Beyond Behaviors by Dr. Mona Delahook, who is right over here in Pasadena. Amazing compilation of all these different approaches, how we've taught psychiatrists and psychologists what's going on with behaviors, but it really narrows down to these five basic areas where lagging skills can exist. And then what is it that we're going to do about teaching those lagging skills? I mean, that's the biggest important thing.
Right.
And parents and teachers are with kids most often, but we don't know when is the teachable moment. How do we even teach that? How do we put the scaffolding in? Mm-hmm.
So do you have some tools for parents for building these skills? And I know, you know, this is a big question, and obviously in an interview, you can't give parents every skill that they need to build these skills, but just kind of, you know, can you talk a little bit about the tools for building these skills?
Sure. And I would highly recommend to read Beyond Behaviors by Dr. Mona Delahook, PhD. It outlines what I'm going to tell you right
now. And I'm sure that's been put in the chat already, so people can follow up on that. Great.
You, in conventional parenting or teaching, you had two ways to handle an unmet expectation. You would apply your adult will and let them know they needed to do what you expected them to do right then. And you keep insisting and doing that. And as we all know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. So when they don't do what we ask them to do, no matter how much we enforce our adult will upon them, we resorted to the child's will. Those were the only two options you had. So for an example, eat your peas, eat your peas, eat your peas. 2 hours later, they haven't eaten their peas. It's bedtime. We resort to the child's will. Fine, don't eat your peas and don't come to me when you're hungry. It's bedtime and get to bed, right? So we've always had two options. And this collaborative problem solving, and this just the whole relational approach mm-hmm. brings in a new option. I mean, I like collaborative problem solving because it's very succinct and it has a great formula to follow. But there are now a plethora of relational approaches that help to give insight into this, what we call in collaborative problem solving, Plan B. And it's both wills. It's like, it's not going to be all your way. It's not going to be all my way. I want to understand what your concerns are as a child not meeting this expectation. I want to express to you my concerns about why this expectation is so important to me and see if we can come up with a solution to how to resolve this expectation being met. Usually what I found in learning this, working with our own son and many others now over the 11 years I've been doing this parenting class, is that we're trying to solve the wrong problem. We don't bring the child on board to really understand what their concern is. So as a simple way to put this, in the example of eat your peas, eat your peas. It could be that the kid doesn't like peas and wants asparagus or broccoli. We want to make sure that we're not imposing our adult will on the child, that we're really trying to express what our concern is, and then coming up with durable solutions that work for everyone. So what this does, Jill, is it helps the kid to be aware of what's going on for them, to learn some language and communication skills, to express their thoughts and feelings, to be able to emotionally regulate. Because if we're just forcing our adult will, it gets into that part of the brain, the amygdala, where they're just fighting. It's the fight, flight, freeze, and fib part of the brain that's really the gatekeeper to getting to that thinking part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex part of the brain, where good solving problem part of the brain exists. And I'm a parent, you know, all of this was fascinating to me. Like, I wasn't understanding what was going on with our son, but once I heard from all these experts what was happening with my style of parenting and using conventional approaches, I was able to switch it over because science was saying there was, as you said, a very good reason why our son's nervous system or other kids' nervous system was getting so dysregulated. And then you get a dysregulated kid. Adults become dysregulated, and everybody loses a lot of IQ points and wonders, how did we get here? How did this happen?
Right. You know, throughout this pandemic, you know, we've talked, everybody is a little bit dysregulated right now, and they're all thrown in together. And so we have talked quite a bit about the importance of this relationship and really listening to each other and opening the door for your child to share about their needs and for you to share back about your concerns and needs. I mean, that education piece, I just think it's huge. You know, there is a lot of pressure from schools and society for parents to make sure their kids behave, or at least there's that perceived pressure. And this approach is, it feels so much healthier and gives parents permission not to have to react instantly in the moment and kind of frees them from micromanaging, which actually is a really good thing. If we can involve our kids in finding solutions, they're going to become more aware and more self-regulated.
That's exactly true. And when I went into all of this and read about growth mindset and believing that you could change and learning how to be intrinsically motivated instead of extrinsically motivated, because, okay, I could be there dangling the carrot or the stick. When I'm there, my kid can behave, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But what about when I'm not there? I want them to learn the skills innately, right? And be able to do it on their own when they're not around. So one thing I wanted to point out too, Jill, that I saw happening, and Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris talks about ACEs and adverse childhood experiences. And with our son, there wasn't really anything you could hang your hat on that was causing him to not behave. You know, we had two parents, we were very involved. He was in a private school. We had a lot of interest and knew the value of education. He didn't have any grandparents pass away till he was later in his 20s. So there wasn't anything to really hang the hat on that he was socioeconomically deprived. And this is why this was happening. And Nadine Burke-Harris talks about the way the world responds to how you're behaving can be traumatic and cause trauma and get you into that amygdala part of the brain where you're just feeling like you have to fight so much to be understood. And that resonated so much with me because, like I was talking about with the literal thinking, and when I really watched our son literally translate, that was, you know, how he saw the world, and then have to kind of go along with that trauma type feeling that everybody's laughing, what just happened? It's amazing and so exciting. I think we have to really figure a way to help parents and teachers, because we put a lot of pressure on teachers to make the class fall in line and, you know, everybody be quiet, everyone keep your hands to yourself. And if we know how to get those expectations met, I'm absolutely saying we should get those expectations met. But if we're using the wrong tool, we're exacerbating and literally causing trauma. And that was really sad to watch our son go through that. But now he's formerly challenging. I do want to share, you know, the hope that we, in 18 years that I've been going down this path and learning from these professionals, there is definitely a movement to understand them much better. And just as a whole, we will absolutely maximize the potential of so many more kids.
You know, I have always felt that our students with learning challenges teach us how to be better teachers in general. And I feel like what you're saying, this kind of approach that you're talking about, I mean, it is brilliant for this population of students, of kids that have behavioral challenges, but actually it's a great way to relate to anyone and probably a more productive way to relate to people in general. So I think, you know, it kind of teaches parents and teachers to just be better at relational relations and problem solving. And that's all a really good thing.
So collaborative problem solving, Jill, really is about that philosophy that kids do well if they can.
Yes.
And that you have three ways to respond to an expectation: plan A, plan B, or plan C. So whenever a child isn't meeting an expectation, we say to ourselves, is this a plan A moment, a plan B moment, or a plan C moment? Adult will, both wills, child's will, right? Mm-hmm. And then with plan B, there's three ingredients to plan B, to collaborating. Finding out what the child's concern is. And that's if there's any magic to collaborative problem solving, it's getting the kid's concern on the table. Because and that's something we never did. Yeah, right. Letting them be heard, figuring out what is going on, making sure we're solving the right problem, right? Mm-hmm. So getting the child's concern is the first ingredient of the plan B. The second is getting the adult's concern on the table, not the solution, because we're really quick to get in there and think we know why they're doing what they're doing and what they need to be doing instead. And then we get in there and fix it, right? We're not doing that. The second step that is new for adults is to just share their concern about what's going on. And then once you get both concerned, and this is a lot of what's called dosing, it keeps you out of that amygdala, that fight, flight, fright, fib part of the brain. And so you get to kind of have that conversation. It's a great formula for how do you talk to kids so they'll listen, and then really listen to them so they'll open up and talk to you. And then you get into the third step of plan B, which is brainstorming solutions. This is where you get to come up with durable solutions that work really well. In the past, conventional wisdom would implement that consequence or give the reward at the end, right? This eliminates that. It's you come back and talk about what happened, what went well, what didn't go well, and that starts allowing that awareness. So in this whole process of collaborative problem solving, the beauty is these skills get taught
right
by the process. So you're not having to like lecture it, teach it, do token economy and keep track of points and things like that. It's a natural back and forth between adult and child that eliminates those power struggles.
It's great. Very, very healthy process. Let's check back in with Lauren, and then we'll wrap up with some takeaways for parents.
Hello. Thank you. Again, lots of parents, this is resonating with them. Andrea says, eat your peas, eat your peas. That's my life every evening. So she definitely relates to that. We did post a link to Beyond Behaviors by Dr. Mona Delahook. And Savannah is chiming in. She goes, I have that book and I've never read it. Well, I know what I'm doing today. Same. I have a lot of books that, you know, I haven't read yet. So you need this reminder to be like, okay, that's my connection. So we posted the link there. And Deborah Ann, who is the other doctor that you referenced?
Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris.
Nadine Burke Harris, Dr. Nadine Burke Harris. Okay. And so we'll try to find the link to that as well.
Deepest well.
The deepest well? Mm-hmm. Perfect. Thank you. Now, Mita says, this has been my life for 15 years. Happy face emoji. we have Doris Bowman commenting that they, you know, offer trainings for schools and mental health agencies in partnership with Deborah Ann and HBCC Serving Parents. And she posted a link to the events page, and she's chiming in later on. The goal can shift from compliance to building skills, exactly what you talked about, mm-hmm. you know, in that mm-hmm. vein of basically executive function training. I mean, you're training the child to learn skills to be able to think and act for themselves, not just compliance. And so, you know, and that's what she's saying, helping schools make the shift from just compliance focus to skills focus and regulation focus Absolutely. Is the key. Absolutely. And we know that as well. Let's see. And you did, thank you for going over the steps for collaborative problem solving, because Ellie was asking, what are the first steps someone can take to adopt this approach? So thank you for laying that out for our parents, because I know a lot of parents do want to, where do I start? How do I start with this, you know, different approach? It is different. And especially if you know there needs to be a change. Namita is asking, how can I get connected with Deborah Ann for her parenting classes? So we will post her contact info. Stay tuned right after we're done here at the end. So yes, definitely. And I told you, we've referred a number in when I was director of the Irvine Center. Definitely we've got calls and parents that were enrolled with us, and we've sent them your way, because this is, you know, I mean, when you don't know what to do as a parent, you feel totally lost. So thank you so much for.
And Lauren, vice versa, because Stowell Learning Center has so many different offerings for families. We work to be a clearinghouse to get parents connected, to really mm-hmm. get a good profile of what is going on with their kid. What is the assessment? So I appreciate our partnership here locally in Orange County, and maybe it'll get through the world now with this pandemic. Yeah. And we're all on Zoom and benefit Absolutely. A lot of families. So thank you for the work you guys do.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yes, we have a number of viewers that are other places in the country today. So I'm so glad that this message is getting out. It is definitely something that is needed. And like I said, a lot of parents, I mean, this your story resonated with them so much. And at the Learning Center, we hear it every single day, the same thing. Like, I have a bright child who is getting kind of pegged as a behavior problem, and we're in this cycle. And when we had Irene on our show last week talking about that continual trauma, how the environment responds to the way I behave or my actions can continue that cycle of you know, trauma kind of happening over and over again. So definitely, I'm so glad. Thank you so much. So parents, make sure to post in Mom Squad, join Mom Squad. We can continue the conversation there. You can find it on our Facebook page or in Facebook groups, SLC Mom Squad. We will get your questions answered, because I know this does resonate with a lot of parents. So that's a way to connect with us.
Thank you, Lauren. This is LD Expert Live. I'm Jill Stowell, here with our guest, Deborah Annaferian. So today we were talking about parents and children dealing with difficult behaviors. Here are a few key takeaways. One, parents, your child's challenging behaviors are not your fault. Two, the conventional tool of using consequences and rewards to change behavior often works, but it doesn't work for every child. And if it's not working for your child, you need to try another way so that you're not setting the stage for a power struggle. Three, if you watch, wait, and ask, your child probably has a good reason for their outburst or behavior. And that's the first step in understanding the real issue and the skills that you need to help your child build. And four, get connected with other parents. This is a hard road to travel alone. Deborah Ann, as you know from personal experience, when you have a child with behavioral challenges, you feel very alone and very judged and really at your wit's end as to what to do. And because you were one of those parents, you put some supports in place and some trainings and resources. So I would love for you to just kind of quickly tell us what's out there. What have you put in place for parents?
Right. So that's exactly what I wanted to do. What wasn't there for our family, I wanted to put in place to make sure that it was available for families. Helping the Behaviorally Challenging Child is a nonprofit. You can go to the website hbcc.us, and we have parent support groups. We have a book club that reads the different books that I've mentioned, because we can learn a whole lot more. We have trainings for parents and teachers primarily. Also, clinicians are welcome to come in. We brought the Bowmans down to do a lot of trainings for teachers and clinicians prior in 2019. We haven't been doing as many this year with the pandemic, but we've been switching to online. So those are on the website and still available, but primarily for parents to get their kids properly assessed and be, we are a clearinghouse to help them get connected to places that will do an assessment outside of the conventional ABA rewards and consequences. We also make sure that parents have proper therapy that's available. The therapists throughout this area aren't just bringing them back to saying, well, you know, make sure you're consistent, follow through with consequences, just moving off of that. Mm-hmm. So we really work to put in place what wasn't there. Just getting your tribe, meeting other parents. You know, it's pretty amazing. When I started this, I thought one or two families would show up, and there were 20 to 30 at a time. So there's definitely a great need. We have a location now in Tustin, a brick and mortar, and we're working to meet the needs of what families are looking for. So communicate with us, get in touch with us, take one of our classes, come to a support group, and we will continue to grow, because this is definitely a grassroots movement from the parents working up.
And if people are not local to Southern California, can they still get that training, that parent training, virtually?
You know, this is the silver lining to this pandemic, right? I mentioned that I flew to Boston and I went to all these trainings. I had to get airplane tickets and hotel rooms. Well, the good news is now, yes, you can go to Think Kids, www.thinkkids.org. And all these trainings are online. So you can be in Europe, South America, the Midwest. And that was quickly switched up. I do believe that there is a lot of value in face-to-face. And we were really focused as a group, being a certified collaborative problem-solving trainer and parent coach. We were focused on getting more communities where it was local. But now with the pandemic, it's really pushed it up to where you can get these classes online. You can read the book, That School Discipline Fix, by Dr. Stuart Ablon, and learn more about how to implement this in a school. Mm-hmm. You can read the books, Explosive Child, How to Implement It in the Home. So, yes.
And I love that some of those books are in, that you're doing it as a book club, because I think that's a really great way to learn. And by the way, Stuart Ablon is going to be on our show in a few weeks.
Awesome.
So we're very excited about that. Thank you, Deborah Ann, for your passion and working so hard to help other parents and kids find solutions to behavioral challenges. Stowell Learning Centers are open for remote sessions and screenings. We're also seeing students on site with all of the COVID precautions. We work with children and adults doing targeted brain training to improve thinking and learning. And our goal for students is to permanently resolve their learning and attention challenges. If you would like a free consultation for yourself or your child, give us a call or visit our website at stowellcenter.com. Thank you again, Deborah Ann. This was incredibly helpful. You probably know some other parents who really need this information, so please spread the word and share.